Welcome and thank you for standing by. For the duration of today's conference, all lines will be open and interactive. If you could please utilize the mute button on your own phone. If you do not have a mute button, please press star 6 to mute your phone. Star 6 again will unmute so you can speak. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to introduce your host for today's call. We have Mr. Fabio Tazzi. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you very much, and welcome, everybody. Good day, good afternoon to everybody. Welcome to a new session of the D-Development Tech Talks. Topic of the day is ITCAM for Transaction, and our speaker is John Sanchez. Said that, I'll just hand it over to John to walk you guys through the deck. John, it's all yours.
Okay, great. Hello, let me just introduce myself. I'm John Sanchez, and I've worked in the ITCAM group for maybe 2 or 3 years now, and we've evolved. As you know, we had the original response time transaction tracking tool, and we've evolved it into run on top of the IBM Tivoli monitoring infrastructure. And so I was one of the architects involved, and I've visited many customers trying to help them deploy the transaction tracking components in their environment. And today I'm going to walk through a presentation that gives you some of the overview of transactions. And then some detail. I want to go down into some details. And so I'll walk through this is a presentation, an NDA presentation we give to customers. It has a lot of good detail. And I'll just kind of walk through and we can adjust the focus areas as we need during the discussion. Okay? So let me just give you an overview of what we're trying to solve and what we're trying to do. As you know, composite ITCAM is trying to monitor composite applications. What we try to do is monitor composite applications in two ways. We look at the response time and availability, as well as trying to do transaction tracking, which is to attempt to isolate where problem areas occur. And so what we're going to focus on in this session is the actual transaction tracking components and how that works. We can talk about the response time components, but I believe that this audience is more interested in the transactions components. So, and this chart slide too is simply showing the landscape of what we're trying to monitor. As you know, applications today are not a single component. There are several components spanning on separate parts of your data center. And so, from the overall point of view, you want to understand how it's performing from availability and response time, as well as where a problem may be occurring when there are issues. And so this chart's just simply saying what I was discussing. I mean, our whole goal is to try to isolate where there is problems to reduce this mean time between failure and mean time between recovery of the failure. And so the customer just sees slow response, but where is the problem? Everybody from a point of view of individual components may see that their component's performing okay, and we're just getting slow response time. So the whole goal is for transaction tracking is to follow the transactions end-to-end, figure out deviations from the response times of the transactions, and point it out to the administrator where the problem may be occurring. Okay, so chart 4 is just kind of showing some of the components that we cover in this end-to-end transaction tracking at a high level. Essentially, we want a composite application usually has web servers, application servers, MQ components, message broker databases, kicks, etc. And the idea is to try to follow the flow, first off, to understand the response time, right? Because when a user performs a transaction, a real end-user transaction like, say, login, how long does that take? And what are the components that get touched? And so that's what we do with the response time components. We initiate a transaction and measure that. But also with transaction tracking, obviously, we want to measure real user response time as well. So we get the response time measurements, but then we also do this transaction tracking, as I discussed earlier. The transaction tracking does a number of things, right? It understands the flow through the data center based on the data collectors installed, and it isolates where the response time may be slowing down. Okay. Of course, we have deep dive diagnostics. So what that means is once we get to a component that's isolated, with the utilizing IBM Tivoli monitoring, we can launch in context into the deep dive tools like ITCAM for WR, Web Resources, or even ITCAM for WebSphere, ITCAM WebSphere itself. Okay, another little, I want to go through a quick discussion on this portfolio consolidation. So as you, we're finally there. I mean, we've used to have this RTT product, and it was on its own proprietary infrastructure. And what we've done is we've tried to evolve that into the IBM Tivoli monitoring infrastructure so that we can get all the values of the integration, the consolidated console, et cetera. And so initially, we moved the response time components, starting at the front end. We moved those components into IBM Tivoli monitoring infrastructure. And then we also started leveraging the ISM, Internet Service Monitors, from NetCool, because those are also doing availability monitoring. And what we've done there is we consolidated these components, moved them onto ITM, and then we followed that up with the transaction tracking components approximately a year later. And I'll go through what changes we've done to the response time, to the transaction tracking and the motivation behind that. Okay, and basically, chart 6 is saying what I had just said. We moved our components onto ITM. So we take our data collectors that we had before, and I'll talk about more details what those data collectors are, and provide input into the Tivoli Enterprise Management Agents, our monitoring agents. And, of course, with that, you get your data warehouse. You have ability to send events to NetCool via the EIF probes, and there's connection with the TATM integration. Again, this is just chart 7 is just simply saying what a composite application is and what we're trying to do. These charts, you all are familiar with the TAP, and this is just another, this chart is just giving a little bit of information, and this is one of the value adds of why we move on to IBM Tivoli monitoring. To have, as we have these different agents deployed across your data center, they're all feeding data centrally into the managing server, and you have a single portal to view the data. Okay, now the topic that we might be interested in is the transaction tracking. I've already, chart 10 is explaining, you know, what it's trying to solve. I've already kind of walked through this. You know, basically the idea is that when there's a problem, everybody's pointing at each other, and transaction tracking is trying to avoid all that and isolate the problem so that the SMEs can deep dive into what the root cause is. This I'm not really going to go into. It's just showing that with problem isolation, there's definitely money to be saved. All right. So this chart, and this is intended to be interactive. If there's questions, you all please interrupt me. So when we initially did the transaction tracking, we were leveraging a component called the Application Response Monitoring Interface. It was a standard interface that we helped push as a standard, IBM. But we, with that standard, we found a few issues. number one, we had trouble with the going onto the mainframe. There was no ARM library support on the native ZOS. The other things we had trouble with was it was asynchronous transactions. So one of the key elements that I've been involved in, one of the key problem areas I've been involved in is this whole deal, this whole notion of passing tokens around and mixing, matching instrumentation. So let me give you a little background on this. This is a technical talk, so I'm going to go deep into the technology. One of the problems has been that our instrumentation puts makes ARM calls, and that's a standard API. However, as the application transaction leaves one process and enters into another process, it does that through some communication layer, through a socket and some HTTP protocol or some other protocol. There's never been a standard that connects those two servers together. And so with the transaction tracking, well, some of the problems we had with that is trying to get our customers to understand how we pass these correlators along, and how, on the other end, you can receive that correlator so that you can understand the transaction flow. And the reason you need some kind of unique identifying information. And that was the mechanism we did. We passed a one opaque correlator across, or we look for identifying information so that you can trace this transaction. Now, the problem was, it's okay if IBM does it all, but when the customer has some unique application that you don't have instrumented with ARM, then we have to tell them how we did it, and a lot of times it'd be very problematic. We'd struggle to make that connection from these applications that we could not instrument with ARM. So we have to come up with something a little bit different. I'm on the next chart, and this is explaining some of the things that we have done. So one of the key elements we did was ARM requires a token as it moves along your process, ARM start or whatever, and you can see different segments of the transaction, even within an individual server. But what we've done is we said, okay, as we leave from one server to the next, for example, going from the HTTP server to application server like WebSphere, we would look, the technique we want to use is there is identifying key identification information within the content of the data that is leaving from one application server, like a web server, to another server, like WebSphere or another J2E server. There's data. We're trying to be non-intrusive. We don't want to force putting in correlators. We want to look at the data itself and see if we can establish unique identification to detect an instance of a unique transaction. And so what we call that technique is basically stitching. What we've done is introduce a new transaction tracking API that allows for not just one correlator, but many different attributes that can be used to stitch or match endpoints of the transaction. So as your transaction leaves one process, our instrumentation will generate an API call, an event essentially, with identification information in there based on the protocol that's being used. And the other end, the receiver of that, the server, say, that's receiving that connection or that message, I make an HTTP, in my scenario, I did an HTTP request. The server that receives that request looks at the same data and just pulls the same data and generates it via another event with similar data. When the two elements of those two events, when the data elements match, we can stitch that and identify that as a unique transaction. And in the real world, how we have implemented that is simply by leveraging technology that we had used in the past. For example, in the HTTP scenario, we still use the ARM correlator. And the reason we do that is because it was already implemented. The technology is there. We didn't want to reinvent that technology. We wanted to just leverage what it is. That was another problem with ARM. You have one correlator, no standard. What we're saying is we can mix and match these tracking techniques. So in the HTTP scenario, there was actually an ARM correlator in there. We would send an event that say, here's the identification on one end, and then on the other end, the server that's receiving the HTTP request, he was saying that he would actually see that correlator and emit the same event. And the way we do that is simply by we still leverage ARM. Obviously, we still leverage ARM and support it fully. But our ARM implementation is calling the transaction tracking APIs underneath the covers. So the ARM interface is the same interface as before. Underneath, we're calling this API, and we use the correlator in that scenario as a stitch data. Now, the thing that's different about ARM was it was ARM, all ARM, everywhere. What we're saying in this transaction tracking is you could have ARM. Your existing instrumentation is maintained. We keep that. But for areas where there's new areas where we haven't had ARM implemented, like Z, we didn't have ARM libraries there. And we didn't have any kind of API calls you can do, say, in the COBOL program at the time. We can take existing event data, generate a transaction tracking call, and link ARM data to the transaction tracking data. But it's more flexible in that you can have several well-known attributes to use. In other words, for example, in MQ, as a message flows, we have our, I believe the channel agents are looking at the messages, and we don't insert correlators at all in the MQ calls. We just read the data, which is ideal. That's the ideal scenario. We want to be able to look at the data, see that there's a few identifiers like a message ID and some other attributes that make identify that message as a unique instance of a transaction. And we use that data. And we can go ahead and stitch that with our ARM data in whatever way we can do that. So the point of this is that as we go through these different domains, we can find different types of API calls or remote calls like HTTP, RMI, MQ calls, KIX calls, and we would look for that identification data and emit the events so that we can do the linkage of the transaction as it flows between the different application servers or domains. And this is all about chart 13 and I'm describing how that all works. Questions so far? Okay. So moving on, I just talked about this dynamic correlation. I'm on chart 14, and dynamic correlation is essentially all the details of what I talked about. And let me explain that a little bit more. Basically, the API allows you to put name-value pairs, and then you can describe to the transaction tracking infrastructure which name-value pairs to try to connect, because in some interfaces, they may not have all that data available, or some of the applications that have been instrumented may not have all the data available, and they could get bits and pieces. And that we do allow you to mix and match at different various nodes some of that data. Now, out of the box, we try to do this seamless for the customer. We're not asking the customer to do this. We're trying to provide as much out of the box as possible. Okay. So this is the architecture that I've been talking about, and I'm going to page, it's animated, I want to just page through it until it's complete, and I'll tell you what the whole picture is. Okay, so on chart 15, so one of the things we've done in the past, another thing we did in the past with transaction tracking in the original product was we had built the tools or the data collector that instruments the domains. Domain is like an application server or an environment. For example, RTT had a component that knew how to generate ARM API calls into the application server. We also knew how to, but the thing was, we weren't all ARM. We did some other things where we used tracking data from KIX, and it wasn't ARM. And it was totally proprietary the way we did that. But the problem was with the tracking component doing its own instrumentation was that we had other products, the deep dive tool products, that also have data collectors on the resource being monitored. And the problem is we run into there is coexistence issues. And I know I've worked on several issues and to help define how we would address coexistence. Let me give you an example. ITCAM WebSphere is a deep dive tool for the WebSphere application server as well as the J2E application servers. Our transaction tracking component also monitored transactions as it flowed into that application server. What we would end up with, when a customer wanted end-to-end transaction tracking as well as the deep dive tool capability of ITCAM WebSphere, we would end up with dual instrumentation. So what we'd have instrumentation making ARM calls and instrumentation for the ITCAM WebSphere deep dive resources. So what we've done is we've taken an approach where we're trying to leverage the experts tooling, the deep dive tooling, to get the data we need, not re-instrument. For example, in the application server scenario, we leverage ITCAM WebSphere now. There is no dual data collectors. So let's look at the architecture here. So at the low end, what we're saying is that the domain-specific data collector is making transaction tracking API calls. We have this new API. They're actually going to call it. If you're already ARM instrumented, you're calling our API, so there's no new work there. But what we've done, for example, if you see the WebSphere, you see the blue box at the bottom, we're using the ITCAM for WebSphere data collector. There's no other data collector here involved. That data collector has a library that he's making the transaction tracking API calls. So at the lowest end, we're not trying to reinvent data collectors. We're trying to reuse them that exist. Now, as you see the arrows going up with the transaction tracking API events, those are those events that are containing the stitching attributes that can be used to link together a unique instance of a transaction. So the agents that the transaction tracking provides are transaction tracking collectors. And you see that the API events are going up to these collectors. So what we have is a library that the data collector can make use of to call the API. The API can go up to the transaction tracking collector and receive those events. And they collected the events, and then these are instances of transactions. That data is eventually analyzed by this transaction tracking reporter. So you can see him up the top left there. And he takes all that data, analyzes it, looks at the stitch data, and makes a transaction tracking flow or in a topology so that we can get basically the flow of the transaction. And all that is using the IBM Tivoli monitoring infrastructure. So our transaction tracking collectors are TEMAs that report to the TEMS, and the reporter itself is a TEMA. And then you use the portal to look at the data from the transactions. Questions? Okay. So let me move on. And here what we see is a sample of the transaction tracking topology. And I'll talk about that. I'm gonna go in detail about that. I do have a demo to show, maybe the last 10 minutes or maybe earlier, depending on how this flows. So, and I do want to talk about the ZOS-specific components. After this presentation, we'll talk about those as well. So, I talked in detail about what we're doing to instrument and receive transaction data from applications. But what do we do with that data? Okay, so the collectors, they receive the transactional data. They maintain it for a certain amount of time. The reporter looks at that data, and he stitches a flow. What he's doing is taking each of those events, matching up the stitch data, identifying unique instances of transactions, and is able to make a topology that represents the flow. Not only do we see the synchronous calls, but we also see the asynchronous flows. And you can see that we have response time measurements of time spent in the call on the synchronous ones, and the asynchronous, they just kind of indicate where it's flowing through because we don't have an aggregate time. There's no return callback on a particular asynchronous call. Now, I'll show you the demo, some of the data. But you also know this little red arrow at the bottom on page, I'm on page 16, by the way, and we see there's an arrow there. What is that arrow doing, and how does that get generated? In the current release, there is a configuration that you can set that allows you to specify a time frame to generate a baseline. What does that mean? Well, as we flow through these different components, the transaction tracking tool itself keeps track of a baseline of the time spent between these components or the time spent in the components on a particular type of transaction. right, we recognize edge transactions. And an edge transaction, let me just tell you where this all begins. An edge transaction is one where we don't see a stitch. You know, this is the first time we see the transaction entering into the system, and we don't have a way to connect it to another part of the system. So that's what a transaction, we see that as a new transaction. And we measure those time spent in this transaction and keep it for, we figure out a baseline after a 24-hour period. Now that can be configured. I've configured it myself to be 15 minutes for the purposes of demos. But basically, after there's a baseline that's generated, when the baseline starts to have large deviations, you'll get this indicator that there's a change, something's wrong. And that's what this red arrow indicates. There's a slowdown in this particular component. And at that point, you would be able to use the deep dive tools to isolate what the problem is. Question? Okay. And here on chart 17, we're just showing the deep dive tool launching context that we have, some of the examples. So as we drill down onto the MQ, we can actually launch in context into the OmegaMon XE for messaging tool to look at the resources that are specific to MQ. So that was the whole idea, was to be able to use the deep dive tool data to help generate the transaction flow, as well as launch in context to the domain-specific deep dive tool like OmegaMon XE for messaging, because that tool has a lot more detail about the inner workings of the resource that is being monitored. But we don't. Another thing I wanted to mention is that we don't try to do these microflows. We're really interested in when the transaction entered a server and when it left the server. Not necessarily each individual step within their server itself. That we left that for the deep dive tool. For example, ITCAM for transaction, ITCAM for WebSphere. He'll show you a thread stack, or he'll show you, a call stack. We're not going to that level of detail. Just want to follow the transaction and tell you the time spent in a particular component. Okay. That's basically the information I had on the transaction tracking, at least at the overview level. Before I go on, first off, is there any questions? Okay. One thing I wanted to bring up real quick for the audience is the ZOS and Z-Linux support. I simply did was I just went to the online help, and I know I went through the components quickly. So I'll just kind of briefly go through. I'm not going to go through all of this. I'm just going to show you the ones that are specific to ZOS. So at the bottom here, if you look at the components, the transaction tracking API is this essentially the library that you make the calls to. And the collectors were those agents that simply collected the events. And your reporter, he knew how to draw your visualization of the topology. So what we have here on the ZOS is we have a collector support, transaction tracking API. What that means is we have the library that you can use to make the transaction calls. So what that is saying is essentially your collector can be on a different machine. So for ZOS, we have the library support, but your actual collector and reporter will be on a different type of machine. The ZOS support is not there for those agents themselves. So that means in the ZOS scenario, you make calls, library calls in ZOS, and it goes to a different server that is supported for those agents. And obviously, our KIX tracking, we have the ZOS support and MQ tracking. Now, the things that we can track in IMS. So what we can track on the native ZOS platform is any transaction tracking API call that a customer is willing to make. That's what the transaction tracking API column is. We also support the KIX gateway component, as well as IMS and MQ. So those are the components that make, we have data collectors that make transaction tracking API calls. Those events get sent to the transaction collector. as the Z Linux support, we could just quickly go through Z Linux as well. So on Z Linux, we actually support the transaction collector and the reporter. We don't have the Kix support there, but I'm not sure if Kix is supported itself on Z Linux.
Yeah, it's not.
Okay. And so we have the Kix transaction gateway support and the message broker, Webster message broker, MQ, and the Webster application server support. So that's kind of outlines at the high level the ZOS support we have. Questions?
Yes, this is Wayne Busek.
Yes, okay.
Is there any single document or consolidated spot that lists the data collection points that are used across the entire enterprise?
Yes. So in this document that is part of the presentation, and the reason it's not in this document is because the other applications, you know, they not in this spreadsheet, because other applications have more detail, the domain-specific applications. However, if I go to this document, the NDA version, and I'm paging through a bunch of charts, here we go. So if you go to this roadmap, this is the roadmap indicates what we have currently. I'm on chart 30, what currently is supported, and what will be supported. So, and y'all have this chart, and I got this directly from Randy Scott, the product manager. This is the most up-to-date version of the chart. And so this is going to chart 31. We see that it gives you this actual releases of WebSphere, MQ, Kix, the ARM support, Kix Transaction Gateway, IMS, the database support that we have. That's the current coverage. Let me see if there's more. Then we talk about more domains. So we have, again, non-VCI tracking, just the ARM, regular ARM tracking, MQ clients, .NET, Tuxedo Server, DB2, and Siebel. And so what we're looking at in the future, and this may be implemented already, I thought it was more J2E support. WebLogic, JBoss Sun, and then we have the NetWeaver. So these are all, this document itself shows you the current domain coverage as well as where we're headed in the future.
Yeah, I guess my question was more oriented on how we get the data at each of these points.
Oh,
as opposed to a coverage thing.
Oh, okay. You mean which collectors provide the data? Is that what you're asking?
At what point do we get control, and how do we collect the data? I would imagine that if you put our topology slide in front of a customer, the first thing that they would ask is, well, how do you get that data? And
right.
So that would be, there would be different points across the different subsystems, and I was wondering if there is any one place where we list out explicitly where we get control to collect data across the various subsystems which are covered.
Right, and when you say get control, you mean where in the flow of the transaction, where do we make the call? Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
How is the stitching done? Whether
right.
it be ARM or whether it be Omegamon Kix collects data within Kix, or how you put it together?
Sure. I don't believe we have a single document that has that information. Previously, I've put together myself those flows. For example, what you're saying, and this is a good point. How do I know that my WebSphere application is going to be able to work with some other application server, and I'm making an API call? How do I know that's supported? That's really kind of the question. That's almost the question you're asking. I mean, we can tell you that we do RMI and how we do RMI, and we can tell you about HTTP and how we do that. And that's almost like, I think, what you're asking. What is the list of all the protocols, the connections between these domains, and how that information is, what attributes are used for stitching? That there isn't, I don't have a link or any place to point you for that. However, that's a good place. I can follow that up with asking Luke McKenna from the transaction tracking team. He might have a better answer than I do. I'll ask him. The question is, I believe the question, and to repeat it, is what are the entry points for my call? Where am I looking for this data? In other words, is it just before I make a call to another application, what am I using as attributes for stitching? That's basically it. And which protocols are supported, and what are the attributes? And how can and given that, how can a customer participate, extend into proprietary things that they've actually owned code for, and maybe they want to make a call, and they want to link into the overall flow? I think that's a couple of questions that I definitely can follow up with on Luke McKenna and team. I think that's what you're trying to ask. What is the complete list, and how do I know what's supported?
Simply stated, I'd just like to know where we get the data from, because I anticipate a customer asking that very question.
Sure. I mean, I can tell you for each of these things, but there's no document that has overall. I got you. Where do we get the data from?
Thank you.
This is John Hatch. I've got a couple of questions for you.
Sure.
First and foremost, you mentioned for the ZOSBase stuff, there's a remote terminal that's collecting the data.
Yes.
What port is being used to send that data to the terminal from the collector or whatever mechanism?
Yes.
And are they documented anywhere?
Yes, they are. There's one port. It's one port, and I don't have a number, but I can get to that. But I can get you that.
That needs to be documented because people need to open firewalls and all that type of stuff. The second question is, everything with the transaction tracking in the past has always been an aggregation of response times.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the case with the whole with the current stuff, with the new stuff as well? In other words, it's an average response time over a number of transactions.
Sure. So let's go through that. I can, yes and no. Let me explain. So what we do is there's a window, and I believe it was, I forget what the window is, where we collect the instances of the transaction. We can actually view an instance transaction topology for a limited time frame. As that window closes, aggregate records are built, and we show the aggregate topologies. And let me just go quickly through the if there's more questions, I definitely want to answer questions. So the answer to your question is, yes, we do aggregates and also instances, but for a small window. Any other questions?
Is that window configurable?
I believe it is. Yes.
What level of granularity?
Instance level?
Yes.
Yes, an actual instance level of the transaction. So,
is it possible to track an individual transaction ID through the system? In other words, when someone submits a transaction, I want to track that individual transaction from front to back.
Yes. So let me show you this. Let me show you this this demo here. Okay. So what we're seeing is basically we have several views of the transactional data as it flows through these domains. We have a server view, a component view, application view, and a transactional view. And typically, let me just walk through them real quick because I want to answer these questions, which are good. As we have the server topology, so what we're seeing in this topology view is essentially an aggregate view. This is an aggregate view of transactions as they're flowing through the servers. Okay. So what that means, like you said, is that we see that there was an entry point and these calls were made as they flow through these various servers, hosts. That obviously is an aggregate because there could be several different applications making calls through those hosts. And so we see that there's one type flowing through a set and another set of nodes that are communicating. But we can actually drill down onto an individual node, say this guy here. And now we're going to look at the components. And what this is showing you is a view of the components view, like the application server's view of the transaction as it flows. All we're seeing is the transaction data. There's one transaction, it looks like. And we can look at the transaction topology. This is, again, another aggregate view.
Hey, John?
Yes.
Hey, this is Mark Laney. Hey, I'm sorry, I apologize for being late to this call. But I heard that there was a question about supported protocols or transports between domains.
Yes, yes.
So there will be a best practice document that's available at the end of the month that will include that information.
Great.
Yeah, Daniel Hernandez is working on that, so it should be available at the end of October.
Fantastic.
Cool.
Thank
Sorry for interrupting.
No, thank you, Mark. So what we're seeing here is the transaction flow from the component perspective. What's different about that is that these components are running on the servers. For example, you see HTTP component going to the WebSphere application server. This is, again, aggregate view. And these are different components that are, as you can see, they're different. They're not connected because these are different transaction flows. And we can keep drilling down to the actual applications. So in each component, you might have three applications, right? On WebSphere, you could have more than one application running. And here we have a couple. We have this, what we call a DB2, and then this get servlet application. And we're looking at the application topology, right? So we're looking at a gross level. We're starting to drill down deeper and deeper into the components. We're decomposing, right? We start at the server block level. Now we're looking at an application itself. So, you know, there's a get info from mainframe web app or, you know, an HTTP request. And it's going into this actual application server, an instance of one of the servers running inside your WebSphere. Makes calls to DB2, goes to KIX, making KIX gateway and some other KIX requests. And so we see the application data flow. This is from the point of view of applications. And then we can actually go down to the actual transaction. So let's just go on to this and we'll say, okay, on this particular component application, let's look at the transactions. And so right here, what we're seeing is actual transactions. Let me go to the topology view. This is, again, an aggregate of the transaction flows. So these are different types of transaction flows. And
now, a quick question.
Sure.
The alerting, when you set the alerting thresholds, I'm assuming the alerting thresholds is on this aggregate data itself, not the instance data.
It could be set on any of this data if you want.
No. The data you're showing me is all aggregate data. I am
right.
Still not seeing any instant data. No. In other words, I want to see an individual transaction.
Sure. And what we're seeing, let me see if I can get to that. Let me just go to this guy here. Let me go back to the transactions deal. What we're looking at is, let's see, link to servers. No, these are the.
If you have a look at the transactions down there, you'll see the transaction rate. None of this; they're all multiples.
Right.
So there's no. I want to go and have a look at that KIX server, the top one there. That's
okay.
13, and show me each one of those 13 transactions.
Okay, let me try to do that for you. Now I know it's doable. I just haven't used the GUI in a while to get there. So here's the transactions, right? Like you said. So what do we have here? So here we go, transaction interaction by time, transaction instances. You see that?
Mm-hmm.
So we go there. So those are all the instances of that particular transaction. Okay, and then furthermore, I think if you just click it, you should be able to see a topology of the particular instance. So that's a topology of an individual instance of a transaction.
Again, it's not showing me the individual transactions. If you go back to that initial thing where I had a look at the KIX thing, there was 13 transactions.
Okay.
Show me all those 13 transactions, because this is the problem we've got with our customers. We do not show transaction-level data. It's always aggregate data. And that's why we have a problem coming up with Bristol Technologies and things like that. We do not show transaction data. So go back to your transaction list again.
Okay. Well, this is the instance. We're looking at instances right here.
That's instant data. Look at the timestamps. Timestamps is every 10 seconds. Do you know how many thousands of transactions can go through in 10 seconds?
Okay.
Okay. There's, what have we got here? Here we've got transactions. Select the confirm update.
Okay.
Show me those six transactions.
Now you got to remember the windows.
No. I want those six transactions.
Okay, well, you have a set of more than six.
Well, there was only six on that screen, so where's the six? Again, here it's every 10 seconds, 20 seconds, every 10 seconds. Hundreds of thousands of transactions can go through in those windows.
That six-field was a rate.
You agree, Wayne?
The six-field was a rate, I think, John.
Yeah, but that's the rate of transactions gone through in that instance data. Show me those transactions. That's what the customer's going to say. I want to have a look at those transactions.
That's what I'm showing you right now.
No, that's not what's gone through.
Okay, well then, you have to tell me why not, because I'm not convinced.
The reason is, you know, for example, your average response time is, say, 500 milliseconds for that aggregate period, and it might be 1,000 transactions in a minute. Okay, one of those transactions might have spiked over a 2 second, which brings the average down to, it's still 500 milliseconds because it's 1 out of 1,000. The customer wants an alert on that one transaction only. Then they want to be able to track another call of that individual transaction.
Okay, so we do keep these instances for a short period of time. That's one of the issues. Right.
So, hey, John?
Yes.
I know in 7.2 there's a capability to, you know, we keep the best, the average, and the worst file.
And I think we do that today.
Right. But in 7.2 they are adding a parameter that allows you to that's a variable now. And so that can be as many as you want. There are obviously performance and scale implications to doing that.
Yep.
But that certainly allows you to get more of the instance data.
Right.
If you want to go and then look at that data. But today we don't persist all of that.
Right. That's right. And that's exactly right. So in other words, so let's look at, I think that we're showing you the transaction instances. But we may not, like, to your point, when there's an alert, you want to capture that instance and have that individual instance kept somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're saying.
And I think they're also adding some capability to be able to create a situation, create an action, that I think will allow us to do. I don't know who's asking the questions on the phone.
It's John Harris.
Hey, John, this is Mark Laney. And maybe this is something we can talk about offline. But, you know, we ran into these same set of questions in our recent engagement with State Farm, and there was some function that we added to 7.2 that we weren't even planning to add to 7.2 to address this, because State Farm is very critical about keeping all of their transactions, all of their instance data.
Correct.
So, you know, maybe we can have a follow-up call and take you through some details on this one, because it is somewhat of a hot topic for our customers. Because they do want to get all of the instance data. But there are some, you know, those performance implications to doing that, too. So maybe we can have an offline discussion.
Well, that'd be good. And I do want to just clarify that, to your point, Mark, basically here we're showing these transactions that have the lowest availability, largest deviation, and the rate deviation. But, yes, I understand what you're saying. We do show instances. We show instances topology, but you want to capture that when there is a threshold violation and keep that around for later, you know, not beyond this window. Okay.
Yep.
Thank you. We'll get you hooked up. That was John Harris.
Mm-hmm.
John Good. Harris. Okay. Great.
And Wayne Busick as well.
Yes, please.
What was the second name?
Wayne Busick. B-U-C-E-K.
B-U-C-E-K. Okay. Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. So, other questions? These are good ones. Well, I think we're only down to 6 minutes left. Any overall other questions? All right. Well, I appreciate your help and your time spent here.
John, thanks for covering this for us. I appreciate that.
No problem. I used to do this job, and I really like it, and it's fun. So, no problem.
Yeah. So thank you, John, and thank you all for attending. And if you are hearing this recorded, and you still have other questions, feel free to drop John an email, me an email, and we will get the right person to answer it. Thank you again, John, and thank you, everybody, and have a good day.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Thanks. Bye-bye.